So, Assemblywoman Rajkumar, thank you so very much for joining us here this evening. And I'm going to get right into our question. So, question number one, New York City is one of the most economically, ethnically, and racially diverse cities in the world. Just look at our coalition partners, which include people from all the boroughs and all across the city. If elected as public advocate, can you tell our diverse audience with diverse priorities and interests what you will do to bring us together and to find common ground? Please be as specific as possible.
Absolutely. Well, good evening. And thank you, Maria D'Angelo, first of all, and Mona Davids. Thank you for moderating this citywide forum. To all the incredible sponsoring groups for the dedication to this city. I'm State Assemblywoman Jennifer Rajkumar, running to be public advocate for New York City. And this 2025, it is time to make a change. It's time to bring common sense back, because common sense has been thrown out the window. It's time to restore trust in our city government, because New Yorkers don't believe that our city government can function anymore. I believe that we can do better, and I have prepared my whole life for this moment. I am ready for this fight. So I would like to reintroduce myself. I am State Assemblywoman Jennifer Rajkumar, and every win I've ever had has been against all odds. My parents came to the United States from India with just $300 and one suitcase. My mom was born in a mud hut, and I was blessed to be born here in the greatest country on earth. And I dedicated my life to civil rights, public service, to give back to the country that's given my family so much. I went to UPenn, I went to Stanford Law School, I became a civil rights attorney. And my first case out of law school was on behalf of 4,000 women experiencing employment discrimination. We won, and the UN called it one of the top 10 cases in the world advancing women's equality. I worked with the Department of Justice to weed out corruption, especially companies that are defrauding the government. And in doing this, I was able to save millions in taxpayer dollars. But along the way, I realized, like everyone on this Zoom tonight, that if you really want to make a difference, you need power. So I got politically involved. Governor Andrew Cuomo appointed me to be New York State's Director of Immigration Affairs and a special counsel, where I opened up opportunities for hardworking New Yorkers all across the state and built and led a $31 million program to provide legal counsel to disenfranchised individuals. And on evenings and weekends, I taught at CUNY in the Bronx to uplift all of the young minds that are going to lead our city into the future. And then I returned to my roots in South Queens, and I ran against an 11-year incumbent for state assembly. Everyone told me, Jennifer, you're a nice girl, but you got no shot. But we won, and we won by the largest margin of any challenger in this state. And I made history as the first South Asian woman ever elected to a New York State office. So I'd like to tell you that in my 5 years in the state legislature, I've been able to drive forward impossible wins for your quality of life. I led and won the movement to shut down the illegal smoke shops that have been hotbeds of crime all over the city. I authored and passed the Smoke Out Act. I said, we're gonna smoke them out and shut them down. And you see now the illegal smoke shops closing. And currently I am leading the charge to regulate the reckless e-bikes on our streets. I'm sure that almost all of you have almost been hit by a reckless e-bike. It's become an epidemic, and I'm pushing forward Priscilla's Law to ensure all e-vehicles are registered with license plate, subject to insurance and inspection. I want to thank my good friends at the E-Vehicle Safety Alliance, co-sponsors of this forum tonight. I see Janet Schroeder on this call and Andrew Fine. I want to thank them for all of their fine work. Finally, I'd like to say, Mona, that the current public advocate, Jumani Williams, is well documented to run a remote office, even years after COVID. And if you call his office, you get an answering machine that says, we'll get back to you in 5 days. So I believe that we can do better. New Yorkers need a public advocate, not a public absentee. Public service is my passion, and I live for this. New Yorkers deserve a public advocate who always picks up the phone. They'll always pick up my phone for you. New Yorkers already are calling me every day from every borough, and I am energized about helping and hearing from everyone. We are running an energetic citywide campaign to topple the incumbent, Jumaane Williams, who is also a self-identified member of the Democratic Socialists of America, who has a history of saying defund the police and protesting against Israel. We need a public advocate who has common sense, stands up for public safety, and who has the moral clarity to stand up against anti-Semitism, which I will do with all of my heart. As public advocate, I'm going to energetically focus on the 9,000 repeat offenders that commit the majority of crimes. Did you know that if we focus on this population of 9,000 repeat offenders, we can cut crime by more than 50%? I will have a list of those 9,000 offenders in my office and focus on the proper targeted interventions so that we can end crime in our city and in our subways. And finally, I'm going to turn the public advocate's office into a legal powerhouse. Did you know that according to the New York City Charter, Section 24, the public advocate has the power to sue city agencies, state agencies, even the federal government for violating the rights of New Yorkers? This power has been unused and dormant under the incumbent Jumaane Williams. So I'm going to bring legal muscle back to this office. And I know how to do it. If the MTA does not provide affordable and accessible service, if they fail in that mission, I will see them in court. The City Department of Homeless Services has enough supportive housing units for all families who need it. Yet many of those units, I will sue DHS to fix that bureaucratic failure. I will make the public advocate's office through the work of the people of this city. So there's a lot more to talk about, but I know, Mona, you wanted me to make an opening statement about what I stand for. So I appreciate this opportunity to speak to all of you, and I look forward to the discussion.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So, Jennifer, you have answered like my second and third question. Because I'll tell you one thing, my second question was, yeah, pretty much, why do we need a public advocate's office? Because, you know, a lot of people have called for abolishing that office, but you have laid that out. So I will pass it on to Maria.
Sure. Great. Jennifer, you've also answered a couple of our questions. You know, we wouldn't have stayed up so late last night if we knew that was going to be such a brilliant opening statement to make our questions irrelevant. But let's talk a little bit about education. We have several community partners on the call tonight who are very concerned about the state of education in New York City. We have a budget that is now $42.1 billion and is nearly one third of our city budget. While enrollment has declined and student achievement rates are abysmally low, how will you advocate for quality education, and how would you use your powers as public advocate to ensure that tax dollars go towards students and classroom needs instead of DOE administration?
I'm glad you asked this, because education is the only reason I am here. And this is, it's very important to me. The public advocate also has the power to appoint one member to each of New York City's 32 community education councils, bodies that provide crucial oversight of the local public schools. And they really shape the policy from the ground up. So this is a key area where the public advocate can really directly elevate voices that are left out. So as public advocate, I'm going to use my power to appoint people who put children first, individuals with their real world experience, common sense, and more clarity to challenge the broken system. And my appointees are going to reflect the full diversity of our city, including immigrant parents and parents of people with disabilities, and leaders from communities like the Asian Wave Alliance, who fight every day for educational equity. I know they are also co-sponsors of this forum and doing incredible work. Shout out to Yiten Chu, who I know is here tonight. I will not appoint political insiders or rubber stamps. It will be advocates who show up, who ask the tough questions, and who demand results because our kids can't wait, and neither should we.
Can you just go in a little more in a little more detail about families that want rigorous curriculum like G&T, screen schools, and who believe in merit? The current public advocate has not advocated for these public school families who really want to, want this quality, rigorous education. For example, opening up more specialized high schools. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, I've been a firm supporter of gifted and talented programs. I've been a firm supporter of maintaining the test for the specialized high schools. I believe in supporting academic excellence and really merit-based systems and supporting children so that they can do the best that they can on the entrance examination. So those are some of my beliefs. That's where I come from. I'm going to make sure that the New York City Reads program that was recently implemented to change reading in our schools, that it's actually achieving its results, because currently 72% of Black and Latino kids cannot read in this city. They're not at proficient levels. That is not acceptable. So where are we going wrong? I'm going to watch the school system with eagle eyes and make sure that any bureaucratic failures get fixed.
Great. Okay, I'm going to turn it back to Mona for the next question.
Okay. So I'm moving on from education. I'd like to talk about the powers of the public advocate. So the public advocate has the authority to sue the city. Do you believe this power should be expanded? And if so, how?
Yes, I do believe so. Section 24 of the city charter gives the public advocate the ability to sue. They can sue city agencies, they can also sue state agencies, and even the federal government. And I think that's a very powerful tool. The incumbent doesn't use any of those tools. But there have been past public advocates that have been very active, including the first public advocate, Mark Green. As a civil rights lawyer, I know how to implement high-impact litigation cases. And in my first 100 days as public advocate, I'm going to implement a series of cases against city agencies to immediately fix bureaucratic failures, but also the federal government. If the federal government implements Medicaid rollbacks, Medicaid cuts, I will sue, because I believe that will detrimentally affect hundreds of thousands of New Yorkers. So you can count on me to be a legal watchdog for every level of government.
Okay, so another question still on the same topic is just voters have lost faith and trust in government as a result of endless corruption scandals, social service providers who are receiving large contracts. We've seen that a lot with nonprofit providers, but are not held accountable for results and other visible failures. What specific measures would you want to see implemented to increase transparency and accountability and hopefully trust in government?
We need full sunlight, full transparency on government operations. Our elected leaders should put the people first, not profit, not campaign contributions. Nobody should be lining their pockets. That's not what a public servant should be in this for. I am here because I am excited to fix this city. I am excited to lift up people in all corners of this city, to make our government work, to make our agencies work, to fix the bureaucratic failures. So that's why we need a public advocate who's going to be a watchdog over the city agencies to investigate contracts, to investigate how they're awarded. and to make sure there's full transparency at every step. You can count on me to take that seriously.
Okay. And my last question before I pass it back to Maria is drug addiction and the fentanyl crisis is a huge problem in New York City. Many advocates believe the injection sites should be used in order to prevent accidental overdose deaths. However, critics of these sites argue that they enable drug use and do more to hurt and disrupt neighborhoods and communities than help them. Do you support legalized injection sites? If so, why or why not?
Legalized injection sites has never been a priority of mine. However, it is a priority of mine to make sure that people receive a lot more support so they can overcome addiction. It has been a priority of mine to make sure that children of our city are not endangered by bad actors who want to get them addicted to nicotine, to drugs. I actually was one of only 12 Democrats in the state assembly who voted against the marijuana law because I believe there was not enough enforcement protections, that there were not enough safeguards to make sure that this legalization would not harm our children. And addiction remains a very serious concern of mine. This is very dear to my heart. I come from a family of all doctors, believe it or not. I'm the black sheep of the family for not being a doctor. But as a elected leader, I can be a doctor for the whole city. That's what I tell my mom. My mom is a doctor in drug addiction medicine. So I have grown up with stories of people whose lives were ruined through addiction. So this is something that I am going to prioritize. It's making sure people have the support services they need to overcome addiction. But actually legalizing these sites is not a priority of mine. I will look into it and see how efficient this idea is and really look into if it's working for us.
Okay. Maria?
Yeah, I think we have time for one more question, which can lead into your closing statement. And it's really following up on Mona's question on public safety overall, which is kind of a very top issue for so many people in New York City. Many people still feel that 5 years after COVID, the city has not recovered and is still somewhat of a mess. Outreach providers have been hired en masse, and immense funds have been diverted to social service providers as a means to clean up many of our neighborhoods. And, you know, New York City is made up of so many wonderful, iconic neighborhoods, small neighborhoods, larger neighborhoods, so diverse. Borough of Queens, the most diverse borough in the country. And we want our neighborhoods to be thriving. But the initiatives that the city has put through aren't really working. Street homelessness, drug arrests, open air drug use, and recidivism are all at very high rates. And according to a very recent survey, only 37% of New Yorkers feel safe. So just closing it up, as public advocate, you can introduce bills to city council that help solve these problems. What would be your first or top priority in going forward to address public safety?
I think you're exactly right. The city is not back on track after COVID. And one problem we have is that there are a lot of positions that have not been filled, a lot of vacancies in our city government agencies. So I'm proposing a bill that will mandate benchmarks for hiring, that agencies have to hire a certain number of people by a certain date. We need to speed it up so that there's enough people in government to make government work. That's number one. You mentioned recidivism. I think this is a huge problem, and a lot of it is because of a lack of common sense public safety policies from Albany. So I'm going to focus on the repeat offenders, the 9,000 people that commit most of the crimes. If there are targeted interventions for this population of 9,000, we can cut crime by over 50%. Along with this, safety. Majority of New Yorkers do not feel safe in the subways. This has to change. So one thing that I am working on is I've introduced a bill to create a new subway safety command center that will focus exclusively on crime on subways. Public safety will be a top priority of mine, as it always has been, because public safety is truly the first obligation of our government.
Thank you so much. If you'd like, you can make a closing statement, and we thank you so, so much for participating tonight. It was really an honor to have you here.
It was an honor to be here. Thank you, Mona. Thank you, Maria. Thank you, all of the sponsoring groups. You may be wondering, can we win? The answer is yes, we can. And yes, we will, with all of your support. We have already significantly outraised the incumbent, Ani Williams, who is still struggling to catch up. I am an insurgent running against an incumbent, and I'm not supposed to receive a lot of endorsements, but I have anyway from several elected officials who know that we need a change, and from several political clubs, including the Hell's Kitchen Democrats. I know there are a lot of people from Hell's Kitchen on this call. Mm-hmm. These are all entities and elected officials that have bucked the incumbent to support my candidacy, because they know that we need a change in the city. The time is now. And we find that when voters know about my candidacy for change, they choose us. And so the next 2 months until the election, we need your support to get known all around the city, and then we can win. Amazingly, only 800,000 people at most are predicted to vote in the race for public advocate. So every vote really matters. Every house party, every way that anyone on this call can spread the word. We can come together, we can make our government work again, we can bring unprecedented energy to our city government. So let's make it happen. And thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Jennifer. I just want to echo what Jennifer said about getting the vote out. It's so critical that everybody really commit. I say this all the time, commit to vote in the primary, but also commit to get at least 10 people you know out to vote in the primary. And remember, it's ranked choice voting. And there's open, there's early voting starting, I think, June 12th, and it goes until the day before the primary day. So there's no excuse not to vote in the primary.